Okay. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education, and it is my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. Tuesday Evenings is a fall and spring series that has grown to be one of the museum's most popular programs, and I think tonight attests to that. We have a really great lineup this spring, and it begins tonight. Next week, we have LA artist Ingrid Kalam. She's here to share her thoughts on her large-scale, pseudo-abstract paintings that are in actuality based on tracings from urban streets and sidewalks to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Ingrid was here a lot of years ago. Some of you might actually remember that presentation. And even as a young artist that had been recently chosen for the Whitney Biennial that year, she gave a really beautiful presentation. It was full of excitement and discovery. And in following her work and in having conversations with her about this presentation, I think next Tuesday holds the same promise. So I hope that you will return, and I hope that upon reviewing the Tuesday evening schedule, which you can receive, you can get at the information desk or find online, that you will commit to some of the other not-to-be-missed lectures this series. Tonight we began with a sure bet. David Bates is a Texas favorite, and for good reason. He has graciously accepted my invitations, as well as those of others in the museum over the years, to give talks on his work, sign books, and much, much more. I do have to wait a few years in between the invites, just for good measure, but with the Modern's publication of the new monograph, David Bates, which I hope you purchased and had signed before tonight's lecture, the time is now, and it's right. I couldn't be happier to open our fifth year of Tuesday Evenings in this building, which just occurred to me today, with David Bates as our first speaker. As most of you, we do lay claim to David. We have all watched him develop as an artist, following his work since the mid-1980s. And for most of you, you don't require an introduction, but just to put us all on the same page, David was born in Dallas. He received a VFA from SMU before being accepted in the Whitney Independent Study Program in 1976. He then returned for his MFA at SMU, and began developing his career from that point. And then in 1987, he was included in the Whitney Biennial. And then in 1988, Marla Price curated David Bates' 40 paintings for this museum. And I venture to say that probably that was an introduction for some of you to David's work. Work that is a mix of classical art references and Southern folk art influences, in which both humor and pathos of the various subjects are captured with honesty and directness that I think stems from the personal nature of the work, whether it's painting, sculpture, printmaking. David's work is in some of the most impressive private and museum collections in the world, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Museum of Modern Art, the Carnegie Museum of Art, the Corcoran, the MFA Houston, the Dallas Museum of Art, the Whitney Museum of American Art, and of course we are proud to have a considerable holding of David Bates' paintings, prints, and sculptures in our own collection. Most recently, David has received critical acclaim for his powerful new work depicting the victims and circumstances of Hurricane Katrina. These new paintings are the subject of his upcoming exhibition, The Storm, which opens February 29th at Dun & Brown Contemporary in Dallas. We will see some of that work tonight, and we're going to hear about past work that's represented in this new book in the lecture, so please join me in welcoming David Bates.
Can y'all hear through this thing here so I don't have to get into the... Is this good? Are we all good? All right. Did you know there was a simulcast in the bar? So just want to let you know in case you have that choice, if you want to make that. You can leave now and still it would be okay. I actually wrote down some notes. The first one says disclaimer. Usually a lot of the people that come to hear all these, when I was at the Whitney program, you know, we had maybe two different artists from New York come in every week and talk to us. And it was everybody. It was the greatest hits of New York. So to go from SMU, which I had an education there that was very traditional. Roger Winter was my teacher there, and he was a descendant of Otis Dozier and all the guys that he learned from. So it was a very traditional kind of background in painting and drawing. And now I don't know that that's being taught even, but you know, at that time it was a really big thing, and that whatever the contemporary, more modern genres were pretty much not an option there so much. Then when I went to the Whitney, you know, everything's, you know, they told me, you're painting like dead guys. And I went, yeah. And they went, well, you know, you might want to do video or something so you won't look quite as dead. I mean, you're still pretty young, so how do I start this? Is this doing anything? Ah, okay. I just have some, and we might want to turn the lights down a little bit. Off of me and on that. Good. The disclaimer is that anybody who does this, anytime I ever saw anybody talk, I figured that, and I still, well, now I'm a little bit better. At 55 years old, I'm finally getting over it. But I used to always think those guys are right and I'm absolutely wrong. For years, no matter who it was. It could be anybody, didn't matter how close or far away from me they were. They're geniuses and absolutely right and doing the right thing, and whatever I'm doing is horribly wrong. And, you know, I think that when you see anybody talk, you just realize it's just one individual's view of what they happen to come up with all the very specifics of their background, where they went to school, where they were brought up, all that stuff all jammed together, and you end up with what you're about to see. I think that you can kind of feel apologetic because, you know, you go up there and you see everything that is not what we do here or not what you do here or whatever. And I think you can get kind of apologetic. But at this point, I think starting at 50, but certainly at 55, you know, people say, well, what artists do you like? What alive artists do you like? And it's like, I really like the dead guys. And it's not but you know, at 55, you figure all the people that are working, you're pretty much as good or better, you know, or worse slightly than those people. I mean, there's nobody in there that's like, oh my God. You know, it's just, you can't really be objective about it. You're all just doing the same stuff. You're all fish swimming at the same lake at the same time. But you hear about that fish that used to really kick ass near that Picasso fish. You know, man, he used to eat anybody anytime he felt like it. So, you know, you had to watch out. But now, you know, it's not like that. You can do whatever you want. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's supportive, but you know, I think that you've been, you know, you finally just get used to it. When people say stuff bad or say stuff good, it's just stuff, you know. And that you're going to hear some of that. Your students are going to hear some of that stuff. Anyway, the way that these things usually happen is just starting with drawings. And recently, in this Katrina thing, I would go and sit with this particular gentleman as he was cleaning fish, and we went fishing together and stuff. And so I would just do drawings, and he didn't even want me to, you know, to sit and draw him because he'd just get up and walk off. So I'd kind of have to work from memory just because of that. The birds and stuff, this is a lot later. That first one was 83. This is probably, what, 04, 2004. So now there'll be more of a sketch, kind of a sketch for an oil painting. You can kind of work around, do different things at different levels and see how it works out or not. So it's different kinds of studies. But for the Katrina thing, I was working from photographs. I tried to work from photographs or watching stuff on TV or something, and it just was so odd to try to do that because it was so different seeing the exact stuff. And I guess if you're an artist that works from photographs, you have that relationship where it's this a lot of information. It gives you the composition. It gives you everything. And you have to decide how much of that you want to use and stuff. And I just had never really dealt with that. And it wasn't photographs as much as watching it on TV. So it was still like experiencing the person a little bit. But the abstraction that you see here is from not really getting to spend a lot of time because the guy'd fly off. So you remember it being a lot more lush, and the paint would become as lush. You'd try to paint is kind of an analogy for whatever it is that you're trying to paint. If you're trying to paint, so for me, if it's trying to be something really thick and lush, then the paint gets real thick and lush, I guess. And if it was something like desert, it might be drier and whatever. I just don't paint deserts because of that. I don't know. Anyway, this is the museum's picture, and it's close to that size. And anytime I get to see these, they're like your kids, you know, that you haven't seen in a while. You get to go see how they're doing, and they don't remember you, or you don't remember them. This was done at the same time. It's another 8-foot bird. And that paint on that was, as I recall, on the bird itself was almost like icing. It was really iced on there and drawn back through, and it seemed featherish, you know, because it was all so thick and white. And then all the stuff that you see there and all the plants and things would be things I'd grab up and bring home or make notes about when I was at the lake. I'll get to that in a second. The art history deal, you know, I mean, I think sometimes, again, this is again for students, but there's a concept of art history and studying art history, and then there's the concept of the art magazines, you know. And the difference is immense, you know, that if you're looking at art magazines and thinking that you're understanding art history, you could be in for this could be uninformed information for you, you know, because the art magazines are ads, and they're different kinds of different things that are put in by galleries and no telling what. And it's all so new and fresh, which is the good stuff for it. But, you know, I was talking to somebody about the show, the 10 plus 10 show that went to Russia. And the art magazines had done their duty in Russia. You know, I mean, they knew that they should be painting like Donald Sultan in Russia at the time in the 80s. You know, so the art magazines can be very damaging and informative. It's like a gun or something. You just have to be very careful with, you know, where you point that. But art history, on the other hand, is much friendlier. You know, it's much broader, bigger, and tested so that you can look at that and see where you fit in. Dave Hickey, I saw him lecturing, and I was glad to see he gave a lecture in Tennessee, East Tennessee somewhere. And my wife and I went to it, and he gave the same exact lecture he would have done anywhere. It was like hard. You know, he was rough. But one of the things he said about artists or writers is he says they start now with art history and they start going back, looking back at art history to see when it started to suck for them. And then that's when they would enter in and try to make it better, you know. And I think that for painting, for me, it was like you'd see other artists that were doing something and you just, with the abilities that you had, you would try to enter in and do something that, where you felt like you might be able to make a contribution or something. And, you know, so if you're interested in Ang, for instance, I couldn't really do anything much there, you know. It's like, that guy's, you know, David, okay, you know, sorry. You're done. I'm not going to try to do anything with that. But when you saw Giotto or, you know, Masaccio's big chunky guys or, you know, certainly, you know, Manet, Monet, Van Gogh, those guys always would go out. I'm in Dallas. And I've never painted. I think there's a couple early paintings from Dallas. Certain guys will haunt you, like, you know, Audubon kind of stuff will pop up. And my friend Claude Albritton I'd stay at his place in Grassy Lake, and there was a print there. And I looked, I'm sure I looked at it all the time, but I didn't realize how directly that guy that's the bird down here that's pinching the snake's skin off, that was right out of an Audubon. It wasn't that bird, it wasn't that snake, but it was like a mockingbird or something. That little detail was not seen in person. The tree with the snake in it certainly was, but that part wasn't. But it was just made, it was all in your head, all information that you experienced. And that's what photography wouldn't get for me. It's all this conglomeration of stuff. You know, there were all different kind of pictures of these birds and stuff. Some of them got much more. I don't think any of them. I asked my wife one time, "You think these are too like realistic?" And she's like, "No, I think you're good." I wouldn't really, if that's a problem, I wouldn't really worry with that. You're okay. You know, the color's a little realistic, you know, if you're on some drugs or something, I guess, but that one was one of the more detailed scenes, I think, that had ever been painted of that scene, of that place, and kind of capped it. It was kind of, once that was done, I sort of stopped. This is a more recent one. After I had quit painting Grassy Lake for, I don't know, maybe 15 years, something like that, and more recently came back to it, so I wanted to show what those kind of pictures looked like. Anytime you go and you do something, then you come back to it, it's always worth it because it's different. If you paint a picture of an individual once and then you paint them again, it's worth it because it's going to look different. I mean, every time it's a different deal. I have this feeling too, and I'm sure that other artists might share this. If you do something on Monday or start something on Monday, if you'd have started it on Tuesday, it would have been totally different. I'm certain of it. I mean, maybe if you're working from a photograph or something where you really, you know where you're going with it, but if it's anything else, the day would matter. The next day would be a very different thing. This was done at the same time as the Katrina paintings, and it was kind of a break. The Katrina things were so serious, and going down there, I went probably 8 times after the storm, right after the storm, and it was, you know, such a, you know, heavy situation that when this owl was painted, it seemed to be a similar scenario, that you had nature and then a victim of nature that seemed to be, in this case, kind of, you know, understood their place, that it wasn't personal, it was just how nature works. I mean, it's obviously what owls do. I think also another thing is that, you know, I'm very influenced by painting and art of the past, but it's mainly nature. I mean, it wouldn't happen without seeing the owl or being around the owl. And I'd seen the owls at different places, but then I went to some, you know, this is going to surprise you that I was at some fishing deal. At, you know, I know that I sound very sophisticated. But I was at Bass Pro Shop or something, and they had the Raptor Society was there with all these different owls and stuff. And I was like, can I take that big one there home? I just need to borrow it for like a few days. And they really, you know, you could really see these things. It was very cool to and touch them and stuff, although, you know, I saw what happened to this guy when he touched him, so. I just brought a group of guys in boats, and there's one at the end with the Katrina pictures, too. And that symbol, the symbolism, and I usually think of these things as having, and they change all the time, you know, they change from, this one looked almost like a quilt in 83, and the Metropolitan in New York bought the painting, and you know, it wasn't my favorite painting at the time. And you think, well, they must know. I'm wrong again. I hate this. You know, I don't even know what my own work is. But you can't. You know, again, it really didn't matter whether the Met bought it or somebody else says that you're horrible or whatever. You have to continue to do whatever you're doing. You know, you can only do. That's all you can do. So. So the paintings change, but the idea, the narrative, there's never been stories, you know, lots of heavy symbolism or anything, but there's certain symbolism that comes with the baggage that comes with anything, a guy in a boat, a vessel, the whole cruise of life, going to the unknown in the boat across the, you know, a place like that, you know, certainly has some various levels of depth to it. It's mainly this guy, but all that other stuff is certainly around. It's just like when people look at it, sometimes they look at a friend of mine had an electrician by their house, and they had that painting, in fact, was there, and the electrician was working at their house, and it was a real fancy house, beautiful paintings all over the place, you know. And he said, he was looking at the painting, and she said, "Do you like fishing and boats?" And he went, "No, I like David Bates' paintings." And she felt horrible. But I felt pretty good on the other hand. But the concept was that, you know, sometimes people look at something because it's a guy in a boat, and they just got back from Bass Pro Shop. And other times they look at it because they love painting and they see how that's being used in this particular thing. Some read all kinds of other stuff into it. So, you know, and the way that this is a fairly, I guess, sort of naturalistic-ish, and this in the winter becomes much more formal. The lake becomes much more gray and black and white and formal place. So it just changes. It's the same kind of painting, but it changes very dramatically enough to paint it for me. Then after the grassy lake for about 8 years, there was a group of pictures that were all about going to the coast, which I went to. I went to Galveston every year with my parents, would take me there. And these are all, you know, pretty big size pictures, all the stuff I'm showing. You know, there's your Manet fish thing, the best as I could come up with, you know. I mean, there's certain little pieces of things, you know, there's kind of Cezanne figures. And, you know, to say that there's some sort of, you know, Poussin triangular composition, I mean, you'd see those all through art history all your life. So the fact that you throw it on this particular painting is really, you know, not that big a deal, but you just know about it. As an artist that looks at that stuff, you know about that. And it's just one more thing that's in there with the color of the girl's skin and what she was wearing, what the ocean smelled like. I love all that stuff. I love nature and the whole feeling of what all that is. You're drinking that in, and I think that's probably what Van Gogh did when he was out there, you know, for painting something in 4 hours in an afternoon. The smell of it, the sun on your face, the way everything looks, all that's coming into you, and then you go home real quick to Dallas or wherever you were and paint that and get that out. And there was something about the urgency of that that was probably helpful. The urgency of not being able to really be down there and live in it, but I had to experience it and then run home and do it. So it made me pay much more attention to it, probably. There's your Sacco-looking dude. Some of these, I literally tried to make a heroic figure. I wanted them to look like a big sculpture. I wanted them to have some feel that there was some sculpturalness to them, to have a heroic look to them. And, you know, if it happens and you see it, good. If you just see some guys that are catching some bait fish in a net, that's great. If you see something from a Max Beckman way spookier picture, great. You know, that's all right. But it's not important to me to the success of the picture. And these groups of guys, I think that there's a difference between if you're painting a group of people doing something and singular figures doing things. Just psychologically, when you look at a group, you figure it's about all them doing whatever they're doing. When you see somebody staring you in the face, then it's something between you and them. This is what the paintings look like. This is the kind of mess they start out as. And then when they get a little bit more spelled out, they just get some paint, some chunks of paint on it. The procedure is you throw paint around until it looks right. That's the key. Don't tell anybody. That's one of those figures. That was another attempt of a heroic figure kind of concept. The idea of a line going into the ocean. When I would go down there and fish, first time I ever caught anything down there, at the coast, there was a guy. I caught this big fish, and I was using all my weight to hang on to the thing, just to use my leverage to pull the thing over the boat. And I finally reeled in this thing. It was in a big party boat with all these people, and they looked over the edge, and we're all looking at this fish I just caught, and it's a giant hammerhead shark, you know, about 6 feet long. It's big to me at the time, and I saw this hand come over. This is in Texas at Galveston. This hand comes over the top and goes, "Boo, boo," and shoots him about 6 times. Shot my fish up. You know, Welcome to big game fishing. These are some landscapes from the coast, which, you know, again, somehow by painting that stuff there, it looks way different than what would happen at the swamp. Winter and spring kind of pictures. You know, sometimes I said that this would be what I'd call just a purely hedonist kind of event. This one, it would be irises. Leanne Williams, who's the framer for my work, has these great irises that she absolutely loves, and she treats them like her children. And I was kind of going through a slump a little bit in terms of my parents had passed on, and I had all these paintings of them dying, and I hadn't painted anything like this in a long time. And she came by, and she had a yellow wall in her studio, and she put these flowers in front of it, and she said, you know, I'd be willing to cut some of these and let you have them. I wouldn't let anybody else have them to paint, really. I mean, these are like my kids. But I'd let you have them because I know that you'd probably do something really good with those, like a dare, you know. And so I go, okay. And then she went in there and explained every little detail about, see how that looks like yellow, but it's really purple. And she would go through every little deal, you know, showing me in there. And then I went, okay, well, I'll take this one. Oh, no, it's an arrangement, she says. You know. You just can't pick that yellow one out because you like the yellow ones. So, and she goes, look at that yellow wall behind there, Dave. You know. So it was, I mean, she painted it for me. She pretty much did it for me. Threw the Van Gogh book under it. And that's her little jug, too, she had down there, some beat up kettle. So this is just about enjoying life. I think this particular painting, and I get in that mood occasionally and love it. It's really such a wonderful place to let yourself be from time to time. But it was just about enjoying painting life, those flowers, all that. Just, you know, it was really just drinking that whole thing in. Probably like I'm dyslexic. That's another thing that you probably, and probably have a little attention deficit disorder. Yeah, I got a lot of flaws. I could go on forever. I could just stop now and just finish off with those and take up the rest of the time. But something like this would be a real good thing for me. A real, as you'll see, you'll be wanting to see this again before this is over. You know, a similar kind of thing with the cannas. There's a tropical, Tropicana, I think it's called. And it was just, it's an amazing plant, so I stole them from the neighbors. And just set them in there and painted them. Such a really smooth and easy thing for me versus other things that, like the parents dying, that might not be so good. There was a clearance sale on loved ones for a while for me. This is a whole group of magnolias. Just again, just like the other subjects that get tackled regularly. Magnolias, I've done at least one every year since 85. When the sculpture was happening, they'd go to sculpture. When the painting was thick, they'd be thicker. When the painting had collage on it, they'd be collage. And it was a barometer for me to tell where the work was going. I could do that subject because I was comfortable with it. If it's a new subject for me, I'll spend a lot of time trying to get your nose just right, you know, and you don't care. Well, actually, you do. And I don't really do any commission portraits of people because I realize that even photographs you don't like. You know, it's like, look at this photograph he took of me. You know, I mean, if you can't get the photograph right, this idea of a painting is probably not going to work out for you. And this way, and the people that I paint usually don't care that